The Kinship of Catholics and Jews is a program sponsored by the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies, Seton Hall University. I'm Father Lawrence Frizzell. I'm the director of the Institute and moderator of this program. With me today is Dr. Murray Watson, who is a scholar in Ontario in Canada, and we'll be continuing a conversation that we had concerning his work. But I'd like also to mention that his family background is not only from Canada in general, but from Newfoundland in particular. And so before we go back to our discussion of Andre Shiraki, tell me a little bit about the experience of your, it's your mother's family that came from Newfoundland.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, thank you. In so many ways, I have come to realize that my involvement in Jewish-Christian relations actually goes back before my birth to the life of my family. My mother's family are all from Newfoundland. I'm a native of St. John's, Newfoundland myself. But my grandfather, who was a politician and a lawyer in Newfoundland, was very involved in welcoming refugees, many of them Jewish refugees who came to Newfoundland during and after the Second World War. Many Jews who were fleeing the Nazis got on boats trying to cross the Atlantic. And one of the ports of call that many of them arrived at was St. John's, Newfoundland. And many of them got off the boat and stayed there. And so there was, from the 1940s into the early 1990s, there was a fairly significant Jewish community in the business community in Newfoundland. And my grandfather had a lot of Jewish friends. Now, one of their neighbors and one of my grandfather's friends was a Holocaust survivor who was my mother's piano teacher. And I remember when I was a little boy, my mom telling me stories about how she would sit down. His name was Andreas Barban. And she said he would sit down to play the piano and would roll up his sleeves. And she saw numbers tattooed on his arms. And she didn't understand that until later and realized a little bit of what he had come through. And I remember her saying when I was young, "You must never allow people to do to other people what was done to the Jews during the Holocaust." So the relationship, the Catholic-Jewish relationship in my family goes back two generations before me and was something that was always drilled into me by my mother, even though I grew up in a small farming town in southern Ontario where there were only two other Jewish families. But they were also families who were friends of ours. So Judaism has run through my family, and the Jewish-Christian relationship goes back at least to the 1940s in my family. And so I feel very proud and privileged to be an heir to those kinds of relationships and to be able to contribute to them going forward.
Wonderful. And of course, we'll now come to the discussion of your work on the scholar Andre Shiraki. And so just remind our listeners a little bit about his career, and then we focus, since we've already discussed his work in the Jewish scriptures and the New Testament to some extent in another interview, we could go to see how he interacted with the Muslim community of his time.
Absolutely. So Andre Shiraki was an Algerian-born French and eventually Israeli scholar and politician. He was really a Renaissance man in a lot of levels. He was a writer, he was a translator, he was a politician who played fairly significant roles in the early years of the State of Israel. He was a colleague and a friend of Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion and served for a number of years in his cabinet. He then went on to become deputy mayor of Jerusalem from 1965 to 1973 under Mayor Teddy Kollek. But before that, he had been a student in France and Europe during the Second World War, a Jewish student in Paris at the time that the Nazis invaded France, shut down the rabbinic synagogue, rabbinic seminary where he had been doing studies. He was a member of the French underground during the war, where he had the opportunity to meet his colleague and friend Albert Camus for some really interesting conversations that contributed to the writing of Camus' book, The Plague. But also he became friends with and kind of a protege of Jules Isaac, the prominent French Jewish historian, whose work really was a catalyst in kickstarting modern Jewish Christian dialogue in the 1940s. Isaac was involved in starting some of the French Jewish Christian relations groups in Paris, but was also someone who, before the Second Vatican Council, made a plea to Pope John the 23rd that the council should consider some kind of a declaration on changing Catholic teachings about Jews. And Isaac gave a whole dossier of historical and theological research to Pope John the 23rd, and that was one of the factors, together with appeals from Monsignor John Oesterreicher, who was a catalyst in the development of a document that eventually became the Declaration Nostra Aetate on the Church's relation to non-Christian relations from 1965. So in many ways, the historians say that conversation with Jules Isaac was seminal in really convincing the Pope to work on this document and to bring it to the council. And Chouraqui had been friends for, at that point, decades with Jules Isaac, and had been doing that work with him in France and later in Europe. So he was an interfaith pioneer. He was a politician, but for my purposes was most importantly a translator and commentator of the Bible, who decided to undertake his own translation of the Bible into French to try and bring out some of the literary and theological messages that he felt sometimes got watered down by more traditional, more institutional translations. So his translation was remarkable for a number of reasons. Firstly, the speed with which he completed it. He started it in 1972. He finished it in about 1976. It was published by 1977. So for a single person to sit down and translate the entire Bible from the Hebrew for the Old Testament, from the Greek for the New Testament, was almost unheard of. There's only a handful of people in history who have done that. It was a labor of love for him, and he produced this very unique translation. But he also was unique because only very rarely have Jews translated or wanted to translate the New Testament. But because of his interreligious work, because of his work in Israel, he felt that it was incumbent upon him, if he was really going to understand Christianity, he would need to grapple with its sacred scriptures as well. So he stands out in history as one of the few Jews to have translated the New Testament, and one of the few, probably the only one at that point, who didn't translate it for defensive purposes. There had been other Hebrew translations of the parts of the New Testament by Jewish scholars, but generally they had been to equip Jewish leaders with ammunition for debates with Christians so that they could defend themselves knowledgeably and accurately. Chouraqui was probably one of the first who was able to do it from the security of the modern state of Israel, not feeling he needed to defend himself, but because he wanted to engage more fully and more accurately with Christians by understanding their scriptures.
And so so this was the first stage of André Chouraqui's development of interfaith relations. And as you mentioned in our previous interview, the situation of the French underground during the Second World War had certainly put a heavy mark, we could say, negative from the outside, obviously, but a spiritually enriching number of contacts that Chouraqui made with others who were in the underground, in the resistance, French resistance. So this kind of work then matured into a discussion that we would now call Jewish-Christian relations. And then tell us about the work which went on with regard to the Quran of the Muslim community.
So Chouraqui often referred to himself as a man in three worlds. That was on the level of language, because his first language was Arabic. His second language was Biblical Hebrew and later Modern Hebrew. And of course, his schooling was all primarily done in French. So he worked in three languages throughout his life. But he also worked among three religions. So he was Sephardic Jew. His family was originally from Spain, had come to Israel in the late 1300s, so had been in North Africa for 500 years at the time that he was born, very deeply rooted in North African culture. So a Jewish family in a predominantly Muslim area of North Africa, at a time when it was a colony of France, and primarily the leadership and the education system was primarily Catholic Christian. So he was always working back and forth between those three religions and those three languages. Grew up with a lot of Muslim friends, and when he, in his political work, especially in Jerusalem, was very intentional about trying to bring Jews, Christians, and Muslims together in conversation when, you know, in the 1960s, that was still a very, well, and even earlier, that was still a quite a radical concept in the Middle East. He was promoting that in his political work, both in the cabinet of David Ben-Gurion and as deputy mayor of Jerusalem. So by 1977, he had completed his translation of the Old and New Testaments, but he always had in mind that his goal was to translate all three of the Abrahamic sacred scriptures. So in the late 1980s, he decided to tackle the Quran as well, because, as I said, his first language was Arabic. So he produced his own translation of the Quran into French called L'Appel, or The Call. So he is, as best I can tell, the only person in history who has single-handedly translated the sacred books of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And that gave him a unique perspective on both similarities and differences among those three religions, ways that their traditions of interpretation agreed with each other and intersected, ways in which they told those sacred stories differently. So he was uniquely positioned to be a commentator on what those three faiths had in common and where they differed. And I think, you know, good interreligious dialogue always emphasizes both commonalities and distinctiveness. And his background enabled him to do that in a way that very few people in history have been able to.
And so with his translating of such a large number of texts, and as you say, putting his own sensitivities into the rendering of sacred texts into French, we have indeed a unique contribution to not only Christian-Jewish dialogue, but an interfaith dialogue, as we strive in a world with so many tragic confrontations to bring the three monotheistic religions into a profitable and beneficial context whereby that people could share without being threatened. And so I think that this work will be very rich, and you're going to publish a book on taking your dissertation into a sort of a wider mold, we might say, for sharing with the wider public. So tell our listeners about your preparations for the publication of your dissertation.
Well, again, things happen either by chance or providentially, depending on how you understand things. When I was a student in Jerusalem, Father Michael McGarry, who is a Paulist father, an American Paulist father, was director of the Tantour Institute, which is an extension campus of the University of Notre Dame, just outside Jerusalem, between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. And we became friends when I was there as a student, and we've stayed in touch over the years by email and occasionally bumping into each other at meetings. And he came up to me at one of the international meetings that we were at, and he said, "So, what have you done with your doctoral dissertation?" And I said, "Nothing. I said, it's just sitting on my shelf right now." And he said, "You know," he said, I think we could publish that." And I said, "Well, it would take a lot of work." He said, "If you could make it more accessible, more to a broader non-specialist audience, Paulist Press might be very interested, because Paulist has its own imprint, which is called Stimulus, which is promoting Jewish Christian dialogue and highlighting issues and thinkers in Jewish Christian dialogue. So he said, if you could write a more popular version, if you could take it and distill down the essence of it for people who don't read French and who might not know Hebrew or Greek, he said, I think there's a story there that needs to be told to an English-speaking audience. So with that encouragement, I spent a couple of years rewriting and recrafting it for a different audience. I took whole sections of it out and rewrote whole sections of it. A little over a year ago, I submitted it to Paulus Press for the consideration of their stimulus board. And the Jewish and Christian scholars who read it were quite intrigued by it and said, absolutely, we want to publish this. So it's in their hands now. I just signed the contract 2 weeks ago, and we're hoping that by the end of 2023, there will be a hard copy book that will share a bit of the story of Shiraki and some of the cool things that he tried to do with an audience that has probably never heard of him.
Thank you. And certainly that will be a great contribution. And on another level, there would be parts of your dissertation that could become essays, articles in a journal, for example, and so on particular topics, so that even the parts of your dissertation which would seem a little too technical for general readership won't be lost. You can bring them into focus in another setting.
Well, to give an example that's kind of pertinent to Jewish, Christian, and Muslim relations, of course, the concept of mercy runs through all three of the Abrahamic scriptures. And of course, each of the surahs or chapters of the Quran begins speaking about God who is merciful. But Shiraki, knowing both Hebrew and Arabic, knew that in both of those languages, the concept of mercy is connected to the mother's womb, rachamim in Hebrew, which is connected to rechem, which is the mother's womb. So he said, how do we connect this motherly image in a way that can come through in French? And he couldn't find a way to do it, so he invented new words. So there's an old French term for a mother's womb, which is matrice, like a matrix. And so he translates womb as matrice, and then whenever merciful comes up in the scriptures, he translates it as matriciel, so matriciel is the adjective derived from that. Matricien is a verb that he derived from that. So he invented new words that were at least theoretically connected to French, but that he thought could express the connection of mercy with maternity and motherhood. And that this was, in Semitic languages, there is a concept, almost a feminine concept to mercy that doesn't come through in most Western languages. So this is one of the things that he did. When he couldn't find a French word that adequately expressed what he thought the Hebrew meant, he didn't hesitate to coin new words in the same way that Buber had done back in the 1920s and 30s with his German translation, which is both the richness of his translation, but also very frustrating for many French readers who look at it and they say, that's a made up word, that doesn't exist. But in his notes, he would explain why he crafted this new word that is rooted in real French words, because he said, I don't think there is a French word that captures this connectedness. And so matrice is connected, for those who know Latin, to mater, mother. Yeah. And he says, so he had a great fascination with linguistics, with etymology, with the root meanings of words, which especially in Semitic languages is so important to understand how words sometimes get clustered. There is in linguistics the concept of cognates, which are words that are drawn from the same roots. And especially in Hebrew, this is a very common characteristic of Hebrew, that often a verb and the accompanying direct object will be from the same Hebrew root. English and French very rarely reproduce this because it sounds very clunky and inelegant in English. But so, for example, you have they feared a great fear. That's very good Hebrew. And we see some of that reproduced in the Greek of the New Testament, which is influenced by Hebrew thinking and Hebrew expressions. So we have, they feared a great fear. They rejoiced with great joy. They desired with desire. So he translates that very literally. He wants his readers to be able to see that there is something going on here in the original text that does not easily translate into colloquial French or colloquial English. But today there are some English translators who have tried to capture the same thing. Everett Fox produced a wonderful volume, The Five Books of Moses in the Shocken Bible series, who tries to do almost exactly the same thing in English that Shuraki was trying to do in French and that Buber and Rosenzweig were trying to do in German. So there is a stream of thinking that says that, you know, there is a way of translating that stays very close to the Hebrew and that tries to bring out the meaning of the Hebrew in a more intentional way, but it yields a kind of translation that is not easy reading. It's not the kind of Bible people probably want to keep by their bedside at night. And yet for those who are really interested in the meaning of the Bible and maybe have another Bible to compare it with, there is real richness there that Shuraki brings out that almost no other translation has been able to do. So I've said to people, he wouldn't be my first go-to Bible for people, but for people who really want to delve into the meaning of the Bible who may not have access to the original Hebrew, they will find his translation will highlight some of the meanings in the Hebrew in ways that other translations don't. So it's both a translation and somewhat of a commentary at the same time, but it's quite a startling translation. And so I wanted to try and bring a little bit of that into English and help people to see why, you know, although we might disagree with Shuraki and some of his choices, the methodology that he uses is quite thought-provoking, and his product, I think, has some real insights that we can appreciate, both in terms of biblical translation, but also in terms of how Jews and Christians and Muslims can understand their sacred scriptures together, can see commonalities, can see points of convergence rather than separation.
Right. And sometimes when we look at Bible translations, for people who have had no introduction to the whole entire context of the spirituality and the long history of the Jewish scriptures and the Christian New Testament, and now the Quran, when we find that people are at a very beginning level, then you'd want to have a translation which flows. Yet when the modern reader realizes that there is a continuity with some corrections and some distinctions being made, of course, by each of the three great religions, the monotheistic faiths, the sense of continuity is extremely important. And that's what, as you've been mentioning, Shuraki's work is able to do, is to bring a focus on the way in which there's a building process, as it were. I'm reminded of a saying by a Benedictine monk in England, Hubert von Zeller. He said, "There's more that's gone into the scriptures than human beings will ever take out of them."
Absolutely.
So
part of what Shuraki wanted people to say, he said a number of times, he said, "I want Christians to realize how Jewish the New Testament is," which today we take for granted. You know, in any kind of study of the historical Jesus or the Gospels, we presuppose the Jewishness of you know, Jesus. The late Father John Meyer, who died a couple of weeks ago, was one of the great scholars of that. He said that, you know, the Jewishness of Jesus has been one of the great discoveries for Christians of the last 30 or 40 years of historical Jesus research. So Shuraki wanted to remind us that the New Testament is first and foremost a Jewish text written by people who at that point still primarily thought of themselves as within the Jewish community. But he said, "I also want Jews to understand that this is a Jewish text." You know, traditionally Jews, because of the way Christians have used the New Testament as a club against Jews, many Jewish people are very uncomfortable with the New Testament, are not interested in the New Testament. But he said that he hoped that his translation could help Jewish people to realize how much the New Testament is Jewish, always has been Jewish, must be viewed through a Jewish lens, and that Jews and Christians could come together to discuss it. Now, he was doing that back in the late 60s, early 70s. Today, that work is flourishing all around the world. But when he started doing that work in the 60s and 70s, that was a bit of an uphill climb. And there were a lot of people who were very critical of him for doing that as a Jew. And there were many people who opposed that whole vision. So I think he was decades ahead of his time in terms of his vision, but I think what he did can still inspire us and guide us and teach us today, even 15 years after he died.
And the other day I received the annual report from the Oxford Center for Hebrew and Jewish Studies, and I shared with you one of the reviews is the way in which Andre Shiraki was interested in monotheism, the East, and the survival of humanness. Professor Job Jindo was the person who did research in this area. So I had no idea that Shiraki had reached out even to the Eastern religions. And I shared that with you, and you have some a recollection of a previous encounter with this Professor Jingjo.
We were in touch during COVID. He reached out to me to ask what I knew about Shiraki's contacts with the great religions of Asia. And I said I knew a few little bits and pieces from things I had read in his autobiographies, but my own studies had been so limited on Judaism and Islam that I really didn't know a lot about it. So I passed him on to some of those autobiographies, and I said, certainly there, you know, he was a Renaissance man who traveled the world in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, met with religious leaders of all the great religions. But I didn't personally, I couldn't contribute very much in terms of my own knowledge in that field. So all I could do was refer him to other published sources. But it's fascinating to see that his fascination with religion was not just Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, that he was a man of great intellectual curiosity who was always trying to build bridges, and those bridges extended also to the great religions of Asia. So I look forward to delving into that that book sometime in the next few months.
Yeah, very good. And so I might mention, when you spoke about stimulus books, the series in the Paulus Press, which has been going on since quite a number of years, the founder of that group is a lady called Helga Kroner, and she is the one who provided funds, I think, to initiate this project. And for many years, she was a friend of the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies. So we certainly want to promote the work of the Paulus Press series, Stimulus Books, and we look forward to having your contribution, the study. You'll give us the title of the study of Andre Shiraki?
The tentative title is Restoring the Gospel's Jewish Voice.
Oh yeah, well that's very good. So so that'll be very, very helpful.
And thank so I'm honored to be included in a series that includes many of my great heroes, the people who have taught me so much about Jewish Christian relations. It's an immense privilege to be considered to be part of that.
Oh, well, you've been a great contributor in your own way, as a member of the younger generation, we would say. I enjoyed being with you today again, Dr. Murray Watson, and I invite our listeners to join us again next Sunday at 11 a.m. for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews.